Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is a Wednesday morning, and it's the 18th of January. I know there's some weather out there. Schools are delayed. There's some icy roads and such. So I hope you're taking it easy and sitting back. Hopefully you're not even in the car. You're home, and you can enjoy and listen and you know, get enraged that way instead of behind the wheel of your vehicle.
How was your ride?
It was dicey.
Yeah.
Yeah. But fine.
Yeah. There was some dice in my way, too.
Everybody's fine. All's good. I have to say, we have a wonderful panel. We're thrilled. Rich Honan is back with us. He is a corporate attorney, and he was away last week, but he's with us this week, and we're more than a little thrilled.
Glad to be back.
Always nice to have you here. Rosemary Armeo, of course, is here. She is a director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, and I thank you.
Delighted to be here.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. I'm sitting here biting my nails, waiting for the lockbox to fill up. Not so much because of the money, because the money is incredibly important. Can't do without the money. But I'm really worried about, will everybody be there? Will people be of courage? I was thinking just this morning, if everybody's going on one of the marches the day after, put something into the lockbox right now. There'd be no question. We'd be done with the drive. So symbolically, it's very important, obviously, to go down. But this radio station will be here, not the day after or the day after the day after. It's going to be here. And we're going to be talking about these issues. And, when Breitbart comes after WAMC, why do they do that? I don't mean WAMC alone, but NPR and public radio. They do it because they consider this to be dangerous. That's what it's about. So I'm just saying that as of today, the lockbox total is 303,794, and we're getting to the point where if we can have $500,000 by the first day of the drive, which is, Joe?
February 6th. 2 weeks from this coming Monday.
It's really getting close now, folks. It always happens this way. We start a little slower, and then we really get going, but this time we can't fail. This time, we really cannot allow ourselves to fail. WAMC.org, there's passion there for all of us. And 1-800-323-9262.
So if you just take 10% of what you were going to bet on the Super Bowl and instead contribute it to WAMC, it should close that gap pretty quick.
It's a very good way of putting it, Rich. Thank you. Yeah.
Except Rosemary. For people like me. And 10% of what I was going to put into this Super Bowl would be zero.
Nothing, yeah. President Obama on Tuesday commuted all but 4 months of the remaining prison sentence of Chelsea Manning, the Army intelligence analyst convicted of a 2010 leak that revealed American military and diplomatic activities across the world disrupted Mr. Obama's administration and brought global prominence to WikiLeaks. The decision by Mr. Obama rescued Ms. Manning, who twice tried to kill herself last year, from an uncertain future as a transgender woman incarcerated at a men's military prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. She has been jailed for nearly 7 years, and her 35-year sentence was by far the longest punishment ever imposed in the United States for a leak conviction. I know, Rosemary, you were, when we were talking about the possibilities of commuting of sentences a few weeks ago, you mentioned mm-hmm. this at the top of your list.
Yeah, this is an act of mercy. That's a tortured human being. She spent 7 years in prison already under horrible conditions, two suicide attempts. There's also some other things that make her case very, very different than Edward Snowden's. She went through military justice system, not the civilian. The sentence is ridiculous. She went in facing a possible death sentence and ended up with 35 years, by far more than a whistleblower's. That's like a Russian sentence. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're moving towards the Russian system. Anyway, 35 years was just insane. She was the leaker. The offenses that we feel so upset about were not done by her, but by Julian Assange, who treated the material in a way that I don't think was exactly exemplary. What else? She's expressed remorse. there's little likelihood that anything that she released caused damage to the United States. There's all kinds of warnings, including from even Hillary Clinton, saying, oh, this was terrible to our national security. Nothing ever happened to the United States because of that material. I think this was an act of mercy, and I'm really glad he did it.
Josh Earnest, the White House spokesperson, said yesterday that making that note that the documents that Chelsea Manning provided to WikiLeaks were damaging to national security, but compared to the ones Mr. Snowden disclosed, they were far more serious and far more dangerous.
The materials that Manning released only had the highest classification was secret,
right,
which is much below what Snowden released. And not only that, if Hillary Clinton were in office after what she went through with emails, I think you'd be looking at a re-examination of the classification system, which is way over secretive. The material that Manning saw was seen by thousands of military, pretty low-level military people. So it's not at all in the same category as Snowden.
So what do you guys make of the fact that the Republicans are really outraged? And that was the word I think Speaker Ryan used, outrageous, by this clemency.
Well, because it's tied into the Russian interference or whatever it is that they did, interaction with the electoral system during the last campaign. And so if the Democrats are going to make a big deal about that, how can they then let Manning go? And they also are very tight on national security, and so any kind of leak at all, they're going to come down hard on.
But you've been critical, right, Rosemary, of Obama?
Absolutely. He's the worst one since Nixon as far as shutting down leakers, which has the effect not only of punishing people who are acting in very good conscience, trying to expose wrongdoing that they can't fix within their own systems, but it has the effect of just making everyone afraid to talk. That's like a police state.
So in terms of my nicknamed Little Devil because of Shatouk is Little Devil, I want to ask you this. If you were president of the United States and people were leaking important documents, putting yourself aside from Rosemary, the journalist sitting here right now, you think you might have felt the same way as Obama?
What I felt the same way as Obama, which is that I had to shut down the leaks. Yeah. No, I mean, you want, if you run a good company, don't you want to know when something's going wrong? I think what I would have done, and that includes Snowden and NSA. Why couldn't Snowden go to somebody in NSA and say, this is wrong, guys, we got to fix this? He claims, and I know it's in dispute, but let's for the purposes of this conversation, let's say that he did do that and nothing happened, so that he felt compelled to go to the press. That's a problem. So if I were Obama, I would want to make a place safe for leakers to come to me.
Do you think there's also a possibility here that there may have been a little three-card Monty on Obama's part because everybody's watching the P under the Manning one, but there was another one which was very important?
The Assange one, this one.
No.
Or Snowden, you mean?
No, the FALN guy.
Oh.
Is that who you're talking about?
Cartwright.
Cartwright, who was the general?
Yes.
Or I thought you meant the FALN guy who was also pardoned.
Cartwright leaked to the press.
Well, except that Cartwright wasn't, and the guy we're referring to was
second in command as chief of staff,
and you know, a really highly relied upon advisor to Obama, and he wasn't the leaker,
and that's how he got into trouble too,
because
he was pointed out as the leaker, and all he appears to have done is said when the New York Times came to him and said, "Do we have this right?" He said, "You do."
And then
he gave out some other
information. He lied
to the FBI about talking to the Times.
Right.
So when the FBI shows up in your office, be sure not to lie to them.
Yeah, I think the two things we've learned from the last few weeks are if the FBI shows up, don't lie, and if they call you, return the calls.
Yes. Which you think would be common sense.
There's some
free
legal advice. I think the other thing that Obama
that
Obama or any president has to deal with when they're dealing with military leakers as opposed to people who are leaking, you know, administration gossip secrets, is that I think more than we realize, everyone around them, everyone in the security community is just hammering the president to say, you know, we can't allow this. This is, you know, our raison d'etre. You know, this, and so it's very hard. I think it would have been very hard many years, 7 years ago or whenever, to you know, have this conversation. And now I think those voices step back a little bit. I think there's a lot of pressure on presidents to really deal firmly with people who are accused of leaking, you know, governmental secrets.
I'm not opposed to that. My concerns are twofold. One is our classification system, and we have known this going back to the Clinton administration, is very messed up. It's too strict, and it calls too many things secret, so that the things that really should be secret, that we all agree we don't want circulated, get treated as less important.
So, and there's a lack of uniformity among agencies on that, which is inexplicable.
I mean, it seems to me that's where you start.
Yeah,
and then the second thing, go ahead.
No, please.
That's number one, is that the system is just, it's just too loose. It's just flaky. And then, you know, the other thing is that you do have to set up a system where discontents have a place to go, where they will feel heard, that their complaints will be listened to. And I don't believe we have that in the government
anywhere.
Easier
said than done.
I think not only is that difficult, it's difficult in any organization, but when you're coming up through the military, you know, that's kind of exactly what they're not about, right? The whole idea of the military is, you know, there's a chain of command, and the chain of command overrides almost everything. So that's difficult. I do think in this one, I hate to disappoint you by not jumping all over this one, but, you know, 35 years is a long time.
That was a ridiculous sentence. I'm sorry.
And at the time, it was characterized as the largest.
Yes.
Volume-wise, it was the most amount of information ever leaked by someone in the military, and so I understand it. But 35 years, I think the LGBT aspect of it will get some political play, kind of on both sides. I think the Republicans, you know, may.
I think that's so unfortunate.
It is. It is.
It doesn't have the direct bearing.
Right. But it's impossible not to, you know, put that into the decision making process when you're discussing it.
So, Mr. Attorney, I have a question for you. Why is it that we wait, the presidents wait? I mean, I can pretty well figure the strategy out to the very end, rather than doing it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, like at the beginning of the year, why didn't
it? Well, because I suspect, answering my own question, you do it earlier, you're inviting all kinds of comeback on the part of your opposition and the Republican Congress and the rest of it. Whereas if you wait till last second, what are they going to do?
Like you had such a peaceful time of it
otherwise. I'll also take an uncharacteristically charitable view of maybe Obama's thinking and maybe every president's thinking at this point in their administration. I think as you start getting down to the waning days, weeks, hours, I think you start thinking much more about the longer view. And you're not thinking day to day as much, and you're thinking about, you know, what? Here's my last few hours on Earth to right such wrongs as I can, you know. And I think that you tend to take a longer view then, and maybe be a little more forgiving of, you know, human misconduct.
Okay, can I make one last point on this too? It's a press point. Manning and others have been accused under the Espionage Act. It's a World War I law. And it has to do with giving information to the enemy. I would like to point out the press to whom these people gave information is not the enemy. So it just seems to me a total misuse of that law.
Well, end up getting posted to the internet, and the internet comprises
you,
the enemy.
We could give you the devil's advocate answer. Yeah. Interesting. Well, we did hear, Joe, I know we're going to a break, but from Claude or Cloudy or whatever. Two questions. What provisions are in place to ensure that cabinet nominees stick to their confirmation promises after they are in office? One. And two, when was the Bible first used at the inauguration? It appears we are, in capital letters, a Christian nation. And that's from Cloud or Claudia or whatever.
George Washington used
it. Yeah, Washington had a Bible.
And he kissed it, right?
I think that Bible is still makes
it's still
around.
In use. Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Oh, and there's another one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
yeah,
man. Okay, here we go. Okay. Hi,
you notice that was a two-part question. We only answered the second part. Right. Let that be a lesson to the White House press corps.
And the first is.
I don't know the answer to the first.
The first is what we're going to say. You lied, therefore, you lied. It's like lying to the FBI.
It's under oath. I asked that question. They do swear an oath when they go there.
Sure, they do. Yeah. Okay.
So is it perjury?
Or as Aldamato once said, that was then and this is now. Things change. Hi, panel. Let's talk inauguration speech. Which Trump will show up? Will it be rally Trump full of bombast, or will this be the stiff droner tamed to the teleprompter by Kellyanne Conway? Neither will be likely to overcome the divisions he has already created in this country.
I think it'll be the latter, and I agree with the final statement.
I will
say the divisions in this country. I won't say the divisions he's created.
Unless he says, here are my tax returns, let me explain them to you. I'm not interested in what he has to say.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. There are many other items to discuss. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan. We welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. We have a few letters to get to, and then we'll move on to other topics. We welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org.
Okay, letter one, number one. What about Petraeus' sentence for leaking of classified information? Rosemary?
Well, it was far less than 35 years.
It was a slap on the hand.
Yeah, don't forget, this was military information of the highest order given to his lover. So it was, in many ways—
Who was writing a book,
yeah. In many ways, it was a worse offense than, I think, you know, if you're measuring these things, than Manning, who was, he's just a very troubled individual and shouldn't have done what she did. Men and a woman confessed and had remorse, so that's equal.
I think on the right-wing side, you're going to hear a lot about this sailor, and I forget his name, the sailor who took the pictures in the submarine, sent them to his mom. He was he's been in jail, you know, for quite some time since then. They made a big deal over it during the campaign, saying, you know, when they were arguing about Hillary allegedly violating the Espionage Act, and this kid's been in jail for—
I don't know about this, yeah, but I would be similarly outraged.
Yeah, it's a big right-wing radio talk show.
Okay, I'll look for that. Yeah. Sailor took pictures and gave to his mom?
Yeah,
ridiculous.
You know,
because the Chinese—
You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to take pictures on a nuclear submarine.
Because
the Chinese
and the Russians and the others, they have no idea what our submarines are all about. That was sarcastic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Irwin from Woodstock says, the discussion of presidential pardons has omitted Leonard Peltier and Mumia Abu-Jamal. They are both political prisoners who may have been innocent of their crimes, of which they were convicted and have been railroaded due to their beliefs. Both were denied fair trials and more like that.
That's it? Okay. Let's go to other topics, and we'll talk about the Congressional Budget Office and the pressure mounting on GOP for post-Obamacare plan following the Congressional Budget Office report. A new analysis that at least 18 million people could lose health insurance in the first year of Congress repeals the Affordable Care Act, which is less than the 20 million that was the figure.
Well, there's 22 million that are on it now that are new, but this was couched in terms of at least 18 million.
18 million could lose health insurance in the first year if Congress repeals the Affordable Care Act without replacing it. Intensified the battle this week over the landmark health care law as President-elect Donald Trump and Republicans try to figure out how to dismantle it. Democrats seized on the report issued Tuesday by nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office to discredit Republican efforts to repeal Obamacare and rally Americans who are insured under the program. The report underscored the political peril that Trump faces in trying to meet one of his top campaign promises, and also the discord among Republicans on how to do it. The political and public relations battle over the ACA is now at full speed, with Democrats holding rallies across the country and inviting Americans to Capitol Hill to describe how their lives were improved or even saved by the law. Republicans, meanwhile, accused Democrats of distorting the truth about the much-debated program, but also revealed signs of disunity about how to meet their promise of repeal without political fallout among voters or economic calamity in the insurance market.
Well, you know, I have said every morning on this show, and you know it, that the one thing that could get Donald Trump into the most trouble would be alienating his Republican colleagues in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, because in the end, they're going to be watching out for their own keisters. When you have 18 million people who are not going to be having health care, that's a lot of pressure. it's not only a lot of pressure from them, it's a lot of pressure. For example, we heard from Andrew Cuomo this morning that the proposed changes in Medicaid could kill New York State in terms of the amount of money that is needed and would be taken out of our budget. So I think these guys, especially when you're somebody like John Faso or Chris Gibson or one of those folks who comes from a divided district, which either side could win, you got to be very, very careful about how you play the carom off the handball court.
I still think it's a non-story. There's nothing here that we haven't been talking about the entire time. It's an update. It's basically a number of this is how many people are on Obamacare. That's basically the number. And so the story is these people have this insurance. If we took away this insurance, they wouldn't have it anymore. That's the story. It's the same thing we've been talking about.
Yeah, I agree with Rich. I don't think the Republicans are stupid enough to take away Obamacare. They'll repeal it and then basically leave it in place until the summer or 2 years from now, whenever they figure out what the replacement's going
to
be.
You know, I was talking to somebody, kind of an insider, and I said, you know, you guys have been campaigning against this for 8 years. How do you not have a plan? And he came back and said, Rich, the problem is you could have a plan in kind of broad, well, this individual said in broad strokes, but are you going to really call somebody from Congressional Office of Bill Drafting and say we'd like you to draft a 4,000 page plan that we know is going to go nowhere and spend all this hours? He said, you know, until the time really came to, you know, where it was really going to mean something and not get vetoed, you know, there wasn't an attempt to reconcile a lot of these views.
Well, Rich, the problem
I'm not saying that's right. But I get it.
Well, I get it, and I don't like it. But I have been thinking about the fact that Donald Trump has basically promised an immediate solution. He didn't say, as you have just implied, that you know you have to work on this for a long time, and we'll finally get back to you with this. He said, "We're going to do it now." And what happens when he doesn't produce? A, he's going to have a lot of Republicans mad at him. A, because he puts them in jeopardy politically. But also they're going to be angry at him because they don't agree with him if he comes up with something. Yesterday we were having Rosemary positing that maybe he's going to come up with universal health care or something
like that. The problem is, Rich, that not even these broad strokes that you mentioned that they—
Yeah, there's not even agreement on
we
those.
We don't even have, yeah, agreement right on that. So you did have Donald Trump described on his weekend talks, his weekend interviews, a system that when I listened to it, I said, that would be great. It's universal and it's single payer. Democrats have been trying for that for years. I do not believe that's what he's really going to end up with, but that's what he described. Everyone would be covered. Deductibles would be lower. What else did he say?
But it wouldn't be single payer, though, because I think the idea was supposed to be that insurance plans would be able to go across state line.
But somebody's got to pay for it.
Well, look, I would start the whole thing from
a
different
place. He said
affordable,
by the way.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all—
And simpler. That was the other
thing.
And more affordable than Obamacare.
Well, how could it not be? I think the plans are going to be simpler. Basically, a lot of what Obamacare is, you know, at the bronze level or whatever, is basically catastrophic health plans.
What is the bronze level?
Well, there's different levels of plans, right? At the lower, cheaper levels, a lot of these plans are what you and I would call kind of catastrophic, you know, very high deductible,
right,
catastrophic
That's
plans.
That's what young people like.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to make those. I think the idea is you make those simpler and you take away, you allow the exchanges to, you almost allow the exchanges to stay in place, but really, insurance companies will be selling these plans across state lines. But I'll tell you, if I was Trump, I would say, listen, I have no obligation. This wasn't my idea. Okay, now it's in place, and you can't pull the rug out from people. But if somebody said, Rich, what do you want to change it with? And I'd say, hey, you know, if we can't come up with a better plan, I have no idea. I have no problem with saying it doesn't exist. We're phasing it out over 6 years on a decreasing right basis. It's been in place for 6 years. We'll give you 6 years to get off it, and now we'll try something else. To me, that is as much a replace as anything.
Well, the really great thing would be if they could sit down and take the plan that's in place that many people like, that Republicans like many features of, and tweak it and fix it and make these changes. That would be ideal. We don't have a government anymore that works that way.
I thought the same thing. You know, I was thinking, because to me, you're basically amending an existing document,
exactly,
which is something we do all the time in the law. And so the question is always, do you start with the existing document and amend it, or do you start with a new document? And putting the politics aside, because no one wants to keep calling it, you know, we don't want to call it Obamacare.
ACA, right.
But you have 4,000 pages. How many of those pages do you agree on? You know, there's a few hundred,
right?
If there's a few hundred pages for the coverage till age 26, what everybody agrees on, and if there's a few hundred pages for you can't
pre-existing conditions, everyone agrees on.
You know,
on.
So if you told me there was 2,500 pages we were going to keep and 1,500 we were going to get rid of, I would just amend the existing document.
This is all very nice, but the fact is that he did say he was coming up with a plan.
I think
it would be done any second now, and that it would be all of the things we have discussed here. Not amending, but saying, I got something better, it will be cheaper, it will be universal so that everybody can get in. What?
Yeah, I think it will.
Rosemary, you're laughing at something.
I'm laughing because on my Facebook page, someone just sent in the sailor story that we just talked about
earlier.
So I'll look at that at the break.
Speaking of,
not laughing at you, Alan. That makes sense.
Oh, I didn't think you were.
Okay.
I thought you were looking at your device, and therefore I was wondering what it was. Yes.
All right. Well,
I feel like a professor who's just yelled at me for having my device on in class.
So we're heading to our break, right,
John? Yeah, we're definitely in need of a break. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Into the panel discussion, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan make up the group. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about Betsy DeVos.
Oh, boy.
She is
President-elect's
education nominee. Democrats attacked her yesterday, calling her unfit for the job during a contentious confirmation hearing on Tuesday night, while Republicans defended her as a bold reformer who would disrupt the status quo in U.S. education. DeVos told skeptical senators that she looked forward to working with them to improve the nation's schools, but she sidestepped several issues important to Democrats and their allies, declining to take a position on whether guns belong in schools or to commit to upholding the Obama administration's aggressive approach to handling sexual assault on college campuses. She called Senator Bernie Sanders' ideas about free college interesting. Michigan billionaire DeVos has lobbied for decades to expand charter schools and taxpayer-funded vouchers for private and religious schools, but she has no professional experience in public schools, never attended public schools, nor sent her own children to public schools, and she has never held public office, and that from the Washington Post.
But didn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't she quoted recently, I mean, maybe even this morning or yesterday, of having said that one of the reasons to allow guns in school is because if grizzlies get into the school, you want to be able to shoot it.
She used an example. She said that gun control should be up to state and local authorities, and used the example of a school in Wyoming that has a fence around it to keep out grizzly bears. So, of course, somewhere in the school there'd be a gun to guard against bears.
So are you defending it?
No, I am not.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Is that even under her purview? I mean,
yes.
So she can.
They were talking about
so
guns.
We could have a federal law that allows guns in state schools?
They were asking a question about guns in schools, and I think about kids bringing guns in schools.
It was actually whether or not she supported getting rid of gun-free zones around schools. That was the question, and that was her answer.
And that guns might have a place in schools due to the threat from grizzly bears.
It's correct.
I'm convinced that's a federal issue, but I heard part of the other thing about the questioning. I actually took some time. I watched hers a little bit. I watched the Tillerson, Secretary of State, and one of the things that I think is appalling from both sides is just how little time the senators get to actually interrogate these people.
The Democrats think that. The Republicans don't.
Yeah, but I'm sure you don't think it was the same way last time?
It wasn't actually. No, actually, that's an issue in the DeVos hearing where there were two rounds of questionings. This year, it's been limited to one, and the Democrats have been screaming about it.
Okay, but I'm sure that when the Republicans were questioning Obama nominees, they didn't have an untrammeled right either, right? It just seems very, very short.
Actually, the Obama nominees had all been through the federal ethics government. Betsy DeVos is not. So what you're doing, Rich, is making the Democratic argument, and I'm loving it.
Well, I don't understand in what way.
The hearings have been rushed and are very superficial.
Well, I think that my understanding is that Trump actually put forward his nominees before Obama put forward most of his. So.
Put forward means says he named them, but their paperwork didn't come into the government ethics office, and when you have people like Tillerson and DeVos who have millions of dollars and hundreds of involvements with corporation, you have more need for an ethics investigation, not less.
Right, but what I never understood why those can't go on in parallel. We do things like that all the time.
That is what's happening with DeVos.
Yeah, that should be what's happening with everybody.
The head of the committee says, a Republican, of course, says that there will be no vote until the ethics committee does its work.
Well.
He also did limit the questioning to one round of questions.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. I think that I thought that.
Why not ask the
questions? How do they get away with that? How do they get away with it, limiting it to one
round? Rules are set up by committee chairman.
But every committee is like that. You see, I mean, they ask these questions that are really speeches masquerading as questions anyway, and
Well, the committee rules are set up by each individual committee chair, and they are, at the moment, all Republicans.
Lloyd writes, please, Alan, you know that Chelsea Manning is a she. Your use today of he, or is it she, is an obnoxious slander I would expect from Trump, not you.
I'm sorry. He didn't do that. Alan did not do that.
I didn't hear you do that. I'm sorry.
I think I did at one point, and it's a slip. Everyone acknowledges, including my transgender friends, that this is, like, confusing. We are making an effort to use the appropriate pronouns. But, yes, we are going to slip.
Also,
forgive us.
And the other thing, too, just to add to Rosemary's outrage, is that...
Well, the change also happened after the commission of the crime.
Well, that's it. When you're talking about the history of the crime itself, because it was not until after the conviction that she announced she was transgender, correct? So at the time, he and not she. And so that's where even in the court, so if we're reading something and we're reading even in the court documents, we'll say he did this as opposed to later on when she did that.
Well, because I am the one who's been accused of an obnoxious slander.
Crazy.
Well, you that's your word. I would simply say she is in a man's prison right now.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that even adds more problems to the list. But certainly she's entitled to be called whatever she wants to, just as the rest of us are.
I think we're in just uncharted territory, and I like it that we are. I think it's good that we're exploring gender bias, but there are going to be errors. That's not slander or ill will. It's a mistake, and it's a learning process to treat people respectfully.
Yeah,
speaking
of respectful.
Not on Manning, but you think Betsy DeVos gets, you think, who of the nominees is in the most trouble?
I think prices. He was trading healthcare stocks
when
he was in Congress. That's
why is it a red herring?
Because I'm sure it was either in. First of all, he's not talking about it because they're going through the ethics committee and investigation right now. But what we're talking about is Congressman Price, who's been nominated for HHS. They have found that he on his behalf, there have been trades of healthcare stocks at the time when he was involved in legislation that would help those stocks.
He traded stocks.
No, the trades were made by an independent broker without his knowledge, I suspect.
However, there was nothing to the broker, no note that said, I'm on this committee, don't trade in these stocks, which my broker has a note saying, I don't want to trade in, and then there's all the companies I believe are immoral.
I suspect that the stock that the account, and it's not clear because nobody said it, I suspect the account was either part of a blind trust or a part of some kind of non-discretionary, by price, non-discretionary account where the broker was making all the decisions.
If that's true, then I will change my assessment, but that has not come out yet.
Especially since the report of it says it was somewhere between $1,000 and $15,000, which tells me that somebody's reading a report
It's a financial disclosure.
Here are the three issues. Okay. Price, as we are talking, as Rich rightly said, Representative Tom Price, a Republican of Georgia. He vowed to divest stock holdings if confirmed in a letter to congressional ethics regulators last week. He listed holdings of more than three dozen stocks, including health-related companies Aetna, Biogen, and Zimmer Biomet Holdings. Democrat Senators Al Franken, Elizabeth Warren, and Tammy Baldwin have raised questions about conflicts of interest arising from his trading in healthcare stocks as a member of Congress. As far as policy differences, Price has proposed restructuring Medicare funding by converting traditional Medicare into more of a market-based system, a move that he says will prevent the health entitlement program from going broke. Critics charge that this could raise health care costs for the elderly and reduce their access to medical care through limited networks. And then the Congressional Budget Office on Tuesday estimating that the GOP's repeal effort would result in 32 million people losing health insurance coverage in 10 years, and that premiums in the individual market would likely increase 20% to 25% in the first year after repeal and double by 2026. And the confirmation is underway in about 5 to 10 minutes.
You know, let me clarify something. You asked who I thought was in the most trouble. I think that DeVos and Price will get the hardest questioning, but I think they're all going to go through.
Really? You think all? Yeah.
I suspect they will. Yeah. By the way, Judy.
Tillerson, you don't see that. He's.
I see him. I see that as usually problematic, but his involvement with companies that would be in conflict with his work as secretary is no worse than the president. So I think it's going to sail through.
I want to point out that Judy checked in and said that my mistake came not while on the air, but at 7:45 in my morning commentary, to which I would respond as the prime minister does in question time. And that question has been answered. I refer you to... our earlier answer.
Well, had we been here to police it, it would not have happened.
Well, no, that's not what I said.
All right. Let's go to... Do you have more letters, Alan?
Yes, you did.
So let's do those and we'll bring us up to a break.
Dearest panel, I like that. Rich Honan is wrong. This is not the same Obamacare news from the GOP. With Obama's veto guaranteed, the GOP could only threaten and grandstand Obamacare repeal replaced. Now, however, Trump will sign repeal and the GOP cannot be filibustered. That's the difference, Rich.
Okay.
Billing for care, says Barbara, is now a nightmare. With each patient having a different insurance with different coverage and copays, energy and time and money is taken away from health care. Buying insurance across state lines is nonsense, and that's from Barbara. Dear Dr. Shartok, I was disappointed with your masculine pronoun. We handled that already. Rich, your comment about Republicans not having a health care plan because it's too much for the bill drafter is ridiculous. They've spent the last 8 years tar and feathering Obama in the extreme. Are you telling me they never envisioned being able to pass their own legislation in the future? They couldn't bother their salaried bill drafters to actually write a law for in 8 years? Nonsense. They don't have a plan because they didn't care about Americans having health care. They care about the insurance and pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yes.
Dear panel, Obamacare is more popular with Americans at 45% than Trump at 40%. Let's repeal Trump first. Some people are saying that Trump is illegitimate, and other people are saying that Obamacare saved their lives. And Richie says, point number one, no state has good affordable health insurance. Point number two, no New York doctors or hospitals will accept insurance from, say, Texas or any other state that creates a plan that would be affordable and would be affordable because of the loopholes and such. Just look at what happened to banking fees when credit cards were allowed to sell across state lines. And that's from Richie. I don't fully get it, but...
Yeah, that whole issue of selling across state lines, I've been looking into, trying to figure that out. The Republicans are all very hot on it, but there doesn't seem to be a great advantage to consumers. It would free insurance companies from individual state regulation, which in some states like New York is very strict. But and there might, because of that, because you're freer to do what you want, you can reduce costs. But there's no indication that that would come down to consumers.
Well,
it helps insurance companies.
Well, I think the idea would be that you'd have a standardized, which you do have now, you'd have a standardized plan. And so Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York could sell that standardized plan
to anybody. Country.
And somebody probably with some geographic adjustments. And then the idea would be that as they create a larger pool of people, they'd be able to pass kind of that risk savings on, so that somebody in California could buy a standard plan from Blue Cross Blue Shield.
But I think Rosemary has a point that this is not designed to help consumers. This is designed to help insurance companies and bigger insurance companies.
Oh, Obamacare certainly was.
No, but I'm not talking about that.
Obamacare was designed for insurance companies.
Well, they had to.
It's not a great plan.
They had, many of us thought that the right answer to this was universal health care and, one provider. And get rid of the damned insurance companies. Sorry. But that's not what I'm talking about here. In this case, I think this plan across state lines, which is supposed to be somehow, incredibly, a substitute for a decent health care system, is going to help the big insurance
company. I don't think it's meant to be a substitute. I think it's meant to be another way of paying for a system that has gotten, that came out of the box unbelievably expensive. And I agree with Rosemary. Obamacare benefited the insurance companies.
For a reason. The only reason it was going to get anything done was to include the insurance companies.
All right. We're late. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan make up the group this morning. We welcome your letters panel at wamc.org. We'll start off with some letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
I don't know. I think I have a problem with pronouncing the Secretary of Education's name.
Let's
I keep
see,
asking.
DeVos.
DeVos. Okay. Okay. DeVos is rabidly homophobic, says John. She wants to stop anything done to help LGBTQ students. She wants to send the school taxes of LGBTQ taxpayers to fund Christianist indoctrination private schools. LGBTQ teen suicides will go up if DeVos has control. And Christopher says, I would argue that it behooves Republicans who are in control of the House and Senate to thoroughly vet Trump's nominees for ethical compliance and competency. We're not blaming Democrats in the past for the process as it is managed now, are we? Thanks.
I thought we were blaming. I was blaming both sides. I thought that neither side has the chance to really thoroughly vet the other side's nominees. But I do agree with the letter that the nominees should be thoroughly vetted, both from an ethics standpoint and substantively. I was just dismayed that the vetting wasn't, you know, more robust. You know, now Rosemary tells me that is a departure from previous administrations. So I'll
it's a departure from Obama. But I know that.
Roger says, maybe we're at the point where only a Republican can fix health care with a Trump surprise of some kind, type of universal health care, improving Obamacare. Remember, it took Nixon, a Republican, to open up to China, or a Democrat, Clinton, to pass significant welfare reform. And I may add, while we're talking about Nixon, it was also Nixon who led us on the right path on environmental issues.
Yeah. Establish the EPA.
Yeah.
Speaking of China.
Yeah.
In a world troubled by grave uncertainties over the basics governing trade, security, and the mission to limit climate change, the president of China on Tuesday portrayed his nation as a responsible global citizen dedicated to furthering international integration. That a leader of the People's Republic of China can stake a claim to the mantle of leadership in the realm of free trade speaks to the unforeseen, even surreal, alteration of the global order in recent months. His message was delivered in the Swiss Alps at the annual gathering of the World Economic Forum, appeared meticulously timed to the tumultuous moment at hand. He was speaking 3 days before Donald Trump was to be inaugurated president of the United States, raising the prospect of a trade war with China, and on the same day that Prime Minister Theresa May of Britain outlined plans to pursue her country's departure from the European Union.
Well,
yeah, nothing objective about that story, but let's keep going.
No, but
what?
No, but it is interesting if you start to think of the geopolitics of this, of what my wonderful mentor Aaron Matrana used to call the situation. The situation here, if you think about it, is that we are now, or Trump is now, best friends with who? Putin. Putin is presiding over an economy that frankly stinks. China is the big competitor with us, and so now China becomes the evil one where Trump is concerned. Now China, of course, is not exactly a democracy, so that throws a different slant onto the way in which we perceive fair play, because in the past they have not always played fair, although they are getting better about it. Right now, you're looking at me in a puzzled
way.
Well,
you're saying China's not a democracy. Russia is not either. So
that's
I'm
correct.
Not sure what the difference is.
No, well, the difference, as I pointed out, is that Russia is in the basket as far as the economy is concerned. Therefore, not of great concern to Trump, whereas China is the big competitor. So
I want to know why you thought the story was not objective.
Just, you know, tumultuous and you know, these huge issues, you know, mentioning climate change and how basically they're
that's pretty huge.
Yeah, basically the story seems to be written as though, oh, what have we come to when the when you know the head of China comes out and is you know
is the so-called good guy.
Is the so-called good guy. But no one's believing anything he says, right? Is that
right.
That's not what the story is about.
And it doesn't
about.
Come out in the story that everyone's believing. There's a whole section on it emphasizing what Alan just mentioned, that he's talking here about openness and fairness, and China jails reporters, jails lawyers who try to use laws to help people who are defending themselves against the government, shuts down the internet. It is a very closed,
probably
very
the worst
repressive.
Polluter on the planet.
It is. However, they did sign and have vowed to take steps under the Paris Accord that Trump wants to nullify. The irony is that it's the Chinese guy saying this, not the American. And he's saying, look, you know, if you want a trade war, it's going to be disastrous for all of us. And he's right. He's right. He has a huge market. And if we walk away from TPP, if we walk away from NAFTA, it's totally a war. And now we've got England, which is breaking away from the European Union, which is in danger of threatening. So everybody will be making their own little deals. And Trump thinks he can get a great deal for the United States. Maybe he can. But China's not going to lay back and let him do it on over their body. It's not going to happen.
No, but I think the lines have been – first of all, remember the concern was – When Trump had the discussion with the president of Taiwan, you know, the concern
yes.
was, oh, we're
right.
heading towards war with China.
Right.
And now we're down to basically, you know, one leader basically positioning himself and, you know, and another leader positioning themselves. And I think at the end of the day, we're looking at probably a very tough but a very peaceful economic negotiation.
Yeah, he even said that. You know, he's made it clear that, look, we're not negotiating about one China. So he's stated his position. You can talk to Taiwan if you want, but you're not dealing with us. And he's the one who has the market. So he's doing his positioning, too, and he said, I'm sure that we'll sit down. Once he's in office, she said, and that's not a pronoun, by the way, that's the name of the minister,
right.
she said, then he will think differently. And I read that and I said, oh, he's hoping for a pivot. So are we.
Well, you know, I heard a couple of years ago about this the current administration pivoting to China and to Asia, and I don't see what it's really done in terms of human rights or in the islands in the South China Sea or in the amount of pollution that's going on.
All true, and so
Trump has just started out at a tougher position, admittedly. Whether that sustains, I don't know. I suspect that position will moderate, as many of his positions probably will.
Right. And you are painting, trying to paint again, as it's like you're either, if you're against Trump, as I am, you have to be pro-Obama. I think Obama made lots of mistakes. One of them was not listening to the idea that Putin was still a player. He treated him like a regional force. And that has been to the detriment of the United States. Romney had that right. So China has moved into the South China Sea. It has, it's changing, but it has made monetary decisions that have hurt the whole world.
Yeah.
No question about it. He did intend to put his emphasis on foreign policy and the Pacific Rim. That's in every one of his speeches. He then gets completely diverted by ISIS and the Middle East and Syria, and he did not accomplish everything. TPP is all he accomplished, and I think that's going to be undone. No question about it.
Joel from Port Jervis. What if President Obama resigns a few days early? This is one of the class of letters. We get them all the time about...
Is this one where Superman flies across the world
the other way around, and
makes time go backwards?
Thus
no,
making
close.
VP Joe Biden president, number 45. President Biden appoints Hillary Clinton as his VP. Then President Biden resigns, making Hillary Clinton number 46 and the first woman president. When Trump becomes president at number 47, all of his president at 45 hats and T-shirts he was planning on selling will be worthless. All in all, a win-win, life is good.
Yeah, I like that. I didn't like it when
internet.
It started, but I like where that ended up.
Okay. Yeah. Dear panel, how can insurance be sold across state lines when it is regulated by individual states? Thanks, and Roger. And again, I want to quote the immortal Al D'Amato, who said, that was then, this is now, things change. If the Supreme Court of the United States says, yeah, well, you know, insurance does already float across state lines, just like health care, that's how they did it, which was supposed to be state regulated, then it'll be all right. Nothing? Okay. Good morning, panel. Maybe the proposal to sell insurance across state lines is not to lower costs, but rather to make it easier for the insurance companies to deny coverage and avoid litigation. It's already extremely difficult to make them honor their contracts, even when they are located locally. I know this from personal experience. Only after enlisting the assistance of the Connecticut State Ombudsman and attorney did they finally pay the claim. That's from Doug. Don says, hi, Alan. As a fan of WAMC, I write to express my disappointment in hearing Rosemary speak similarly as Mr. Trump does. And that is, I hate him, she said yesterday. Damn, it's contagious, but unhealthy. One should keep that type of sentiments to themselves, yes?
Yes, you're right. I shouldn't have said I hate him. I hate his policies. I hate his character. I hate his actions. I hate that he's president.
File this in whatever it's worth, department. Okay, dear Rosemary, I turned in for a few minutes today, and I thank you for speaking up on behalf of whistleblowers. Thank you for also explaining Obama's use of Espionage Act and how it does not apply. Are you aware of the Ministry of Truth that could take away the rights for journalists as well as a bill that gives Homeland Security more control of the infrastructure of our elections? This is not good. This will only help the elites in power to put their desired candidate. It would have helped Hillary Clinton to unfairly win. Our elections need to be transparent to the electorate. That is what Obama does. Is he about to leave office as well as spread anti-Russian propaganda and try to get us in war with Russia? This is good for the military-industrial complex. It is not good for the people of the world. Thank you again, Rosemary.
That seemed like more than 140.
It was.
Yeah.
It is. But I'm going to save it.
Okay, I'll be honest. One. As the letter reader, I will confess my problem. You know, sometimes you start to read these letters, you haven't read the whole thing. And once you're in the middle of the letter, you say, whoops, I guess I got to go on further so I can understand what this person is.
One of the best letters we ever got, it was an anti-me letter, and I won't, the re-line, the subject line actually said in big letters, do not read this on the air.
Really? Why do people do that?
Because they had something very funny and very cutting and not very appropriate to say, and they wanted to make sure that that exact thing did not happen where you accidentally read it. So they said, do not read it on the air.
In fact, that
was
happened
great
to me
too.
One time. As long as we're doing confessions, I heard from a doctor who had treated Libby, and it was an insulting letter towards Libby. And then when I looked up, it says, do not read. I said, why do people do that? Why are they sending us stuff knowing we're going through them one after the other?
Well, you follow their advice. You didn't read it.
I did read it.
Didn't read the top.
Oh, yeah. Good point, Joe. Kathy says, I'm actually an advocate of selling across state lines to allow insurance companies to expand the pool much more easily. But as the panel points out, it has become tricky to honor state laws. This situation begs for a national standard for health care insurance laws, and that appears to be what will be required to sell across state lines. Interesting that the GOP is so eager to step on states' rights. Well, that's true. And when it's convenient, they do.
Yeah, that is, and that is an inconsistency with it's not so much the GOP, but the whole conservative idea that states' rights over. But I hear that. That's true.
Going back to the Supreme Court deciding the 2000 election.
And Susan says, thanks for discussion about saving across state lines. Every time I've heard Rich glibly mention this panacea, I've wanted to scream. There's no way a company in Montana is going to sell me a policy for $200 to replace the $500 one I have in Massachusetts. If the costs of care are higher here, they might even charge more for the same benefits. And that's from Sue.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, except that the companies, they're not companies in Montana or Wyoming. They're companies like Aetna and big insurance companies that are trying to expand their pools.
There's the Bison Insurance Agents. Barry says, Miss. Sorry. All I do is get looks from Rosemary. Okay. Ms. DeVos has no idea what the inside of a public school looks like, has no concept of their value to the average American life, and has no interest in finding out.
Yeah, it does make me a little uncomfortable. She never went to a public school. She never sent her kids to a public school. She never filled out a financial aid form to send her kids to college. She's so distant from it, and this from the man who is most in touch with the working class.
Yeah, that is troubling. That's troubling. I would like to think that she's had some experience in her personal life with the public schools before attempting to
change
govern them.
I know these people. They would have said, she would say, because I've argued with them 1,000 times, I would have sent my kid to a public school, except that they weren't as good as I would like them to be. Anyway, there's one last line here. I'm quite certain that she has the same lack of knowledge about grizzly bears, although maybe she should see the inside of one of those someday, not the woman for the job. Okay, and panel, Medicare with 80% covered 20% of your own private insurance or similar to Obamacare as they both expand insurance business and its profit. I'm just reading what's down here. Insurance rates increase is why people are upset. What is the priority, maintaining insurance profit or health coverage for people in need? This reality need more airtime. Democratic Party, take a hit for the insurance company. And that's from Art.
All right, there we go. Two things there were to sum up here in our final moments. There was an article regarding a number of House members who are boycotting the inauguration. I believe it's up to 60 now.
Wow.
Who will not be going. There's an interesting article in the Washington Post this morning that notes and asks this question: why are no senators boycotting the inauguration? The reason? National ambition.
Isn't it part of what the article goes into?
Doesn't
the Senate always think of itself? I'm not saying this is true, but the Senate kind of thinks of itself as the more austere kind of...
above that.
Yeah, above the rough and tumble of the House. You know, and that it would be... senators might think it's less appropriate for one of them to sit out.
Much like the former presidents who are attending.
Yeah.
Well, Terry wrote us a letter. I just want to read that before we're done. And he said, "Nothing in my world starts until the panel," in quotes, "is over. Thank you." Isn't that nice?
That's very nice.
Please review the Citizen Initiative published on KingstonCitizens.org, a proactive group of citizens in the thoughtful community of Kingston, New York, willing to step up, lean in, and take action. It's inspiring.
And that is happening all over.
Yep.
Citizens are taking action, and marches are just the beginning of it. But I have an inconsistent feeling about the inauguration. I applaud the former presidents who are coming. I think that's the right thing to do.
Yes.
I don't think the Democratic House members going, are doing the right thing. I think the senators are. But I am enjoying the hell out of all the entertainers who are saying, no, I won't perform there. He made comments about minorities and LGBT people that is deeply hurtful. Have been deeply hurtful to that community, and I think they're responding as they ought to.
I'm just waiting for all the entertainers who said they were going to move, right? How many of them said, if he wins, I'm out of here? They're still
here. I don't know who said that. I know of one person who said that, and that person is moving.
I know her, too.
All right, let's end there. My thanks to Alan Chartok, Rosemary Arbeo, and Rich Honan. And we will continue the roundtable after this short break.